This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Always nice to catch up with Tommy Lasorda, who is the special advisor to the Dodgers owner, Frank McCourt, but of course the former manager of the Dodgers and member of the Hall of Fame as well. And Tommy, I was reading a story the other day about Dodger Town and the damage that was done to the facility. How is it down there now?
Well, I'll tell you something. They did a fantastic job in getting this place back in. It looks just as it did before, although we have to have new lights because the lights went down. We had to put in a new scoreboard.
You know, that area and that facility is one of the special ones. It's almost like going to the Hall of Fame itself. Take me back to the first time you went to Dodger Town.
1949. I landed here. I come out on Eastern Airlines. They landed here. They used to have it going out of Vero Beach. So mm-hmm. I walked. It was about 10 o'clock at night. I walked about a quarter of a mile to the main office, and I woke the guy up that had to give me my stuff for my bed, and he was a grouchy old guy and scared me to death. And he gave me my pillow and everything like that, and I went up to my room. I turned the lights on, and there were five guys in the room, three double bunks. We had 780 players in the camp, 26 farm clubs. It was a baseball factory. You could not believe it, that the way the thing was run down here. But they had teams, and they were like different colors, white team, the blue team, the gray team, the brown team, and that's the way you played with them. And if you had a sore arm, you were to wear a gray hat. And that way everybody who was looking at the games would determine and know that you had a sore arm. And if you had a bad leg, you only wore one blue sock and the other one was white. That indicated that you could not run hard because of your leg. So Branch Rickey did such a fantastic job down here. It was quite an experience. And, you know, when I looked at this, and I got up in the morning of 780 players going to breakfast, it scares you. You know, what's going to happen to me? Geez, oh, my. Well, am I going to be able to survive here?
Mm-hmm.
And here it is, and I'm still surviving.
There was something special about Vero Beach and Dodger Town as well. I always thought that it created a family, it created a ball team kind of atmosphere that maybe you didn't find at the other camps. Am I correct in that observation?
It's the only team that spring training where the major leaguers sat with the minor leaguers and ate with the minor leaguers in the same place. I'd never seen another spring training camp like it. Here I used to go around and sit next to Pee Wee Reese and Ralph Branca and Jackie Robinson. And I'm riding home and telling everybody I had dinner with those guys.
Tommy, when you take a look at Dodger Town over the years and how it changed with the decades and the changing of baseball, what did you notice over that period of time?
Well, I noticed that they cut down on the minor leagues. That was the big thing. They felt that it was an economical move that each team have just five or six minor league teams. That was cut down. I thought the salaries were different than when we played. The money the players were making were unbelievable. And they had free agent. They had unlimited drafting. Whereas when we had the limit drafting, you can pick one team on a draft from a AAA club, and that ended that club. Nobody else could be drafted off of that club. Today, you can draft as many of them as you want. So the big change has been in that respect.
Obviously, Tommy, when you have that many players together and you can work with them, you're going to get better fundamentals. How did that develop as far as the overall talent that filtered up to the big club?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. When we had 26 farm teams here, they had you busy all day long. And when it was time to close, you didn't want to go anywhere because you were so tired. They had you doing everything, all kinds of instructions, all kinds of area parts of the game. And you hardly ever went into town because you were too tired to go. And France Rickey and Al Campanis was the guy who set the schedule, Fresco Thompson. Those were the guys that that really, really developed this place into a baseball factory. Mr. Rickey did such a fantastic job here that he built a team of tremendous ability. And we had three AAA teams. Now, let's say you were a catcher at Montreal and you hit 40 home runs. You know where you went the next year? Back to Montreal, because the guy in Brooklyn hit 40 home runs. Let's say you were a center fielder and you hit 375 at St. Paul. You went back to St. Paul because who's going to beat Duke Snyder out? Let's say you were a shortstop at Hollywood and you stole 50 bases, you hit 330, 11, 12 home runs. You went right back because you couldn't beat Pee-wee. This Brooklyn team was so tough, so great, that nobody was able to crack it. So everybody stood the same. Everybody, I won 15, 16 games in AAA and never got a shot at my first 4 or 5 years. You couldn't get a shot.
What did you see?
The great players that were on that Brooklyn club.
Tommy, what did you see as the difference kind of in the attitude and just the way the team developed when it left Brooklyn in the 50s and moved to the West Coast? Because it came, you know, it's going to Hollywood at that time.
Well, I think everybody was concerned on what it was going to be like to go from Brooklyn to Los Angeles. It seemed like you were going to the other end of the world. It was so far away. Because the farthest we traveled was Chicago. And we traveled by train. And we traveled by train to St. Louis. And that was the farthest we traveled. Now we're going to L.A. And we're gonna be able to go from one end of the country to the other. And everybody was kind of concerned. Nobody believed that, you know, that we could move. Now, everybody began to blame Mr. O'Malley for the movement to the West Coast, and they were mad at the wrong guy. The guy they should have been mad of was a guy by the name of Moses, Robert Moses, who was in charge of all the fields and the everything in the Brooklyn and New York area. Now, Mr. O'Malley went to him and said, look, I have a small stadium. I got players making $38,000 to $42,000, and I can't afford it. I got to have a stadium. You give me the ground, I'll build the stadium. I won't even ask the city to build them. Moses wanted to give him the ground over where Shea Stadium is. He said, hey, wait a minute. We're not the New York Dodgers. We're the Brooklyn Dodgers. Give me the ground in Brooklyn. Moses wouldn't give him the ground. So he said then, if you don't give me the ground, I'm going to have to move. Moses thought he was bluffing. He wouldn't give him the ground. Mr. O'Malley was not bluffing. He left and he took the Giants with him.
That's amazing. That's a story I had never heard before. Tommy, one thing that's always been said about teams, Tommy, and you know this, is that they take on the personality of the community they play in, and that certainly was the case of the Dodgers when they were in Brooklyn. But you uproot them and take them out of Brooklyn, which is different from New York, and take them and put them on the West Coast, which is certainly different. How did those players that were really the reflection of the Brooklyn community feel about being the reflection of Hollywood?
Well, they had to react, and they had to get used to the fans, because the fans in California were a whole lot different than the fans in Brooklyn. Brooklyn fans, they stayed till the end. You never see them leave the game.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Los Angeles, they have great fans. Many, many of them went through the turnstiles over the years. Very, very successful franchise. But some of them would always leave to beat the traffic. Some of them would go to give the children to sleep so they can get up and go to school the next day. And that was the difference. There were laid-back fans in Los Angeles, whereas in Brooklyn they had the symphony band playing all throughout the stands, and the organist was Gladys Gooding. And it was just always a tremendous place of entertainment. People were very close to each other. And that was the difference. And then when we went there the first year, of course, we didn't do good. And then the second year, we got into the World Series. That was in the 1959 World Series with the Chicago White Sox.
Tommy Lasorda has joined us here. Fascinating conversation, hearing a little bit about the history of the Dodgers, both back in Brooklyn and also as they move to the West Coast. We'll talk a little bit more about this with Tommy as we continue across the country and around the world on the American Forces Network, the Internet, Sirius Satellite Radio. We've got you on Sports Byline.